everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. And remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Look at your background. Hello. Yeah.
How are you? Yeah, I'm standing right now. My background has me standing in Harry Station.
I need a background where it's from your POV of the con.
So yeah, we could. It's like job trade day.
It is.
And you're running. You're running the
So instead of wife swap or husband swap, this is job swap.
Yeah, okay. Job swap.
Yeah.
And you've swapped with the transporter chief, I see.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
John Tampoya was in the transporter room that episode we reviewed recently, and he was injured. So
yes, he did a little stunt work.
He did a little stunt work there. So yeah. I thought, you know, in homage of John Tampoya, we're going to go ahead and show a little bit of the transporter room there.
Nice. I can't believe that we're into season 5. That's all I got to say.
I'm just glad that we're still doing this thing, you know?
Oh my God.
This is something that has been such a, I don't know how to explain this, but it's been such a highlight of so many people's weekly schedules that it's almost like imperative that we just keep on doing this, because we are adding joy to so many people's lives by doing this podcast. So it's an important
thing. I agree. I mean, without trying to sound dramatic or anything, the feedback that both you and I are getting so often is, it's not only the recap of the episode and whatever, it's the memories that you and I have. It's the community of Delta Flyers patrons that are coming together virtually in all kinds of ways. They've met up at a few conventions, live and in person. They're creating relationships and support for each other through this pandemic and these tough times. So I'm really proud of our little podcast here.
Me too. We have initiated so many friendships, which I'm going to go on the limb and say that these are lifelong friendships that have been forged because of this podcast and because of our little side project that started back during the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And I know it's been tough on you, because whenever you direct, especially when you direct and you're not producing, you are really tired. So by the time the weekend comes around and then you have to fill that weekend with Delta Flyer commitments, it's not easy. So I just want to thank you personally for hanging in there and not sort of throwing in the towel, because you could have easily said, you know what, you know, go get Tim Russ and do this, because I can't do these anymore. I don't have the time, but you've stuck with it. So thank you for that.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you. It was a great idea. And it's grown beyond my wildest imagination of what it could be.
Agreed.
So it's been awesome.
Let's just jump right into it. This week's episode is Night, Season 5, Episode 1, Night. And
season premiere.
Premiere. So this should be a good ep. I'm excited to go watch this. Without further ado, let's go watch this episode. We'll be right back. And for all of you Patreon patrons, thank you for supporting us. Please stay tuned for your bonus material. We're back from watching season 5, first episode of season 5.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we didn't remember that this was the introduction of Captain Proton.
It's a B storyline. So how are you or I expected to have recalled that this was the introduction of Proton? We're not going to know. Okay. Save it. Save it. Let's start right off. Let's jump right into this with our poetry synopsis of Night. Here is my haiku for Night.
Ready.
Captain Proton. Yay. Malon poisoning the void. Together we win.
Oh, Captain Proton, yay!
Yay!
I like it. Okay, all right, here's, okay. Here's a little poetry limerick.
Lay it for on me.
Night. Here we go. Voyager is flying through the void. Captain Proton is here to be enjoyed. Janeway is in a funk. A problem gives her some spunk. They ride the vortex and leave the garbage destroyed.
Nice. Good job. Good job. All right. Excellent. Okay. That's a good start for this recap of this episode.
Yes, it is. Good poetry all around. Captain Proton made an appearance in both the haiku and the limerick, so that's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. Okay.
Night, written by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky, directed by David Livingston.
We got that right.
We did get that right.
Sure did. Talk about the guest stars.
Wild guess, by the way. We had. We were flying blind on that. We were totally guessing. Okay. Yeah. The role of Emk, who was our, garbage man.
Malon captain,
yes. Ken Maggi, McGee. Okay. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Ken McGee, I think it is. Mm-hmm. I don't remember working with him. I don't recall, but I thought he did a great job. Anyway,
He did.
He was great. He was from Texas. He died in 2015.
Oh, so darn it.
And McGee is no longer with us. I hate when we look into some of these guest stars.
I'll be honest with you. As far as guest stars go, he didn't have a ton of lines, but the lines he had, such interesting choices of how he delivered them. His acting choices were outside the box, and I really enjoyed them to the point where
I was
going to recommend, let's contact him and get a hold of him and interview him, but we cannot do that now. He's passed away. That's a bummer. Oh man,
it's just a reminder that on this podcast we need to reach out to as many people as we can, and of our guest stars, of our series regulars, of our crew, all of them, because getting some of these memories down and some of this is
And not just for episodes coming up, but for episodes we've already reviewed. Like, I wouldn't mind coming, grabbing some of these guest stars, because why not? I think the fans will be just as excited to hear from or about these guest stars, having them on the show and having them discuss their roles and their unique perspectives. I think it would be a bonus. Big bonus.
I just think, when we have these moments where we look into an actor that we really enjoyed in an episode, we realize that they've passed away. Mm-hmm. It's just a reminder not to waste a minute of this podcast and try to get as much information as we can. This is
agreed.
I've said it before. It's like a historical record of Voyager in a big way. And and it's important. So the next actor guest star is Steve Dennis, who played both of the Night Aliens.
Oh,
so he played Night Alien 1 and Night Alien 2.
Oh my god.
Is how he's credited. Maybe because of that makeup and costume, they only wanted to spend the money on one, and so he played both of them.
You think they didn't have enough budget to make enough
I think full it was body the costume. Costumes. I think it was the costume. Next, we have Martin Rayner as Dr. Chaotica.
Yes.
Come on, people. He is so good.
Yes.
So, so good. I don't even know where to begin with Martin. He's British. He's from England. I forget the town he's from. Mm-hmm. I did read something about his father left in some of the bio that I had found. His father left when he was 2 years old. So he grew up without dad around. And I think there was a polio outbreak in his family, in his town that he was in. Rough time. He grew up in a part of England in a time where things were really tough. The interesting thing about Martin, I loved Martin, by the way.
He was great.
Working with him. Mm-hmm. He was awesome. Mm-hmm. He had a little catamaran sailboat. I remember he would talk about that he kept down near Malibu. And he always invited me. I never went out to do it, but he was like, you've got to come out and we'll go Hobie Cat. It was like a little Hobie sailboat, tiny little, day out sailor. You and I did a Hobie Cat down in
Turks and Caicos. Oh, yes, we did.
that little Hobie cat that we took out. Yeah. So Martin had one of those and he wanted me to come out, and he was just such a nice, nice man. And so much fun to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Rayner, loved him. Anyway, our last guest star who didn't have any lines, but she screamed a lot as Constance Goodhart, is Kirsten Turner. Kirsten Turner played Constance Goodhart.
Yeah.
She is married to Eric Turner.
Yes.
Who is best known as the guitar player from
Warrant. The metal band
Warrant.
Yes. I'm actually still in contact with Kirsten after all these years. We still follow each other on Instagram. We still will message every now and then. So I would like to get a hold of her to try to have her talk about, you know,
Captain Proton.
Exactly.
And the screaming role. Mm-hmm. Did she ever have a line? I don't know.
No, she just screamed her. She just screamed her bloody head off, pretty much.
And I
got to tell you, she has some pipes. So loud. And you even see in that beginning scene, I react to how loud she screams. I'm like, I'm like, oh my goodness. But on set, just really super nice. Super nice as you can. Yeah.
That's our guest cast. That's what I got.
All right. Good job, man.
Let's jump into our story. So
let's jump right in.
We open, the very first thing we see in season five, the very first image is we hear old fashioned music and this logo comes up with an earth.
Yeah.
Rotating. It's like a, And the first thing I thought of was, it looks like the old RKO radio pictures.
Oh yeah.
Which, by the way, the studios, so the building where Rick Berman's office and production offices were, that was the old RKO main building. And that's why there's a planet on the corner of Gower and Melrose. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
That was RKO Radio Pictures, was our production office.
And
Paramount ended up buying them and consolidating them, or Desilu bought them first. It was RKO Radio Pictures, then Desilu, then Paramount.
Wow. And
as Paramount expanded. So when that planet comes up in the first thing, I was like, oh my God, it's
that
just
looks like
the production office and RKO Radio Pictures. Mm-hmm. That was my first thought.
Yeah.
But very cool opening. We see Dr. Chaotica on a microphone.
Right.
He's looking through like a submarine little eyepiece or something. Mm-hmm. And he's threatening the Earthlings.
Yeah.
Oppose me and you will be slaves in the mines of Mercury. And it's all in black and white, which I loved.
And then we cut over to Harry. Harry has the first line after that. And I like my little eyebrow action, like, you know, when I'm telling him, well, you haven't, what did I say to him? I say something to the effect of, you know, I'm basically introing you is what I'm doing. Like you didn't count for one thing though. And I give him the quick little eyebrow thing, like meaning Captain Proton. And so you bust in with your goggles on.
Yeah. The jig is up, Your Majesty, I say as I come in.
Yeah. Love your little retro cool ray gun that you have, that you're holding. Mm-hmm. You come save the day.
By the way, I was chewing gum in the scene, which I thought was a cool detail. Oh, that's right.
You were chewing gum. I forgot.
I was chewing gum in the scene. I think that might have been my idea. I was like, oh, it's 20th century's Mr. Cool.
I should chew some gum.
Yeah. What if he's chewing gum? Cool. I think I'm 99% sure that I talked David Livingston into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Spaceman First Class, Protector of Earth, Scourge of the Intergalactic Evil, at your service. Yeah. It was great. And then as we're just, you know, getting to this point of a climactic moment in the Captain Proton story.
Yeah.
The doctor walks in.
And he's in color too. He's not even in black and white, which Harry changes. Harry changes that very quickly. Mm-hmm. And he's fighting for time on the holodeck, which to me, because all he wants to do is sing isn't he about to sing his aria or something like that?
He says he wants to rehearse his opera thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is my problem with this. There's holo emitters in sick bay. He could have just used his office to turn that into his concert hall. He didn't have to come to the to holodeck one. He doesn't need an actual entire holodeck.
At this point, we only have two holodecks.
We have two, and they should be reserved for the human characters, not for the holographic doctor. And he has, listen, like I said,
Tom Paris felt the same way.
Yeah, it
Tom
was wrong.
Did not want him to do it.
I was highly, highly annoyed by the entrance of the doctor. And again, once again, he shouldn't have had any dibs on holodeck time. I don't think so, because he has holo emitters in his office. He can create that there, right? As far as he's
trying to be one of the crew.
I get it, but it's still,
Garrett, trying to rehearse this thing. Well, we need a little conflict so that they can.
I get it.
Later
get
on,
it. I'm just as annoyed as Tom is what I'm trying to tell you. Okay.
So they start to argue over who's going to use Tom and the doctor argue over who's going to use the holodeck, punching buttons, and there's like a fritz, and we cut up to the bridge, and Chakotay sees an alarm, and calls the holodeck. He's like, "Hey, something just blew out, and the last thing we need is a broken holodeck." He says,
"Right."
So clearly, you know, and you can see on the bridge things are kind of different, you know.
Right. Yeah. But the response to Chakotay, it's me responding to Chakotay. I think we both do. But in our voice, you can hear how annoyed we are with the doctor. Like there's no, like we're like, yeah, we're on it. There's an ish, you know, you can hear this just through gritted teeth, but we're not saying what's going on. We're not saying that we've been fighting the doctor, but you can definitely hear that there has been tension, and it's in both our voices that don't worry, Chakotay. We'll take care of the issue.
Of course. Seven shows up on the bridge. Chakotay's like, please can you give me some good news. And she goes, so nope, sorry. There is what I can give you is there's no star systems within 2,500 light years of where we are.
That's incredible.
No stars.
There's nothing.
It's just pitch black.
Yeah.
She said the only thing, we're picking up a little theta radiation, and there's theta radiation is occluding our sensors.
Right. Heavy concentrations of theta radiation, which is blocking our ability to see anything beyond this area. And then this is, we also learn in this scene that it's been 2 months already. Right, that we've been going through this.
2 months so far, and it's 2 years left.
Right,
if we
2 years left
in this blackness.
Yeah, we cut to the exterior space shot of Voyager traveling in complete darkness, which is so weird to see that. It's so bizarre. There's nothing out there at all, and that's the shot that we get.
It's very hard. I would imagine this was hard for the VisFX people to figure out, because if you are in the void of space and there's no light at all,
right,
then you wouldn't even see the space.
You shouldn't even be able to see the ship either.
Yeah, you might see some windows, but they would appear to be floating in
space. Exactly.
In space, because there's no exterior light lighting the ship up. So they had to find a bit of a balance there, I guess.
Agreed. Agreed.
And then we go to a hallway shot. There's a first officer's log. Chakotay's talking about the power cells. They're trying to stockpile deuterium using power cells because they're not going to be able to get any supplies.
Right.
We're not coming across any resources of any kind for a long, long time. Yeah. So
2 years. So that's a long time.
And then we go, where do we go after that?
We go to the briefing room. And I have to say right now, Paris gets a haircut. Look at your hair. You are aerodynamic. I just love it. It's short. It's clean. It's not poofy. It's not fluffy. I really liked Paris's hair. Shorter, to the point where it looks like you even lost weight in this episode. I don't
feel
know.
Like all of us looked a little healthier because we had stopped shooting these 15, 16, 17 hour days.
Yes.
We had been on a bit of a break. It was probably usually our hiatus was in the springtime. So it was usually around April, May or something like that.
Right.
So we probably were getting out, getting a little sun, you know, exercising. We just looked rested and healthy.
Sure. And you know, we just reviewed Demon recently, and that episode is where the writers told us to go work out. So I do feel that all of us sort of got a little more slim and trim by the time that we filmed
Beltran
this episode.
Looked good. He was in a short sleeve shirt at one point. I was like, he looks fit.
Yeah, everyone looks pretty darn good in this one. Yeah.
Yeah. Chakotay's running the meeting. We still haven't seen, by the way, the captain yet.
Janeway. No Janeway yet.
Mm-hmm. No Janeway. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Chakotay's running the meetings. Once reports, B'Elanna says, you know, nothing new. Her staff is going crazy. They want something to do.
Yeah.
Chakotay asks Harry for any updates. Harry says, nope, nothing going on. It's everything's normal. Nothing new. Tuvok says, you know, this theta radiation thing is the only thing that's new news. And Tom Paris says, well, finally, some excitement.
Radiation.
And the whole crew laughs, which I thought was a
har har har. Yes, it's a laughing
bad
moment.
Joke. Yeah. But they're desperate for anything
definitely
to laugh at. So
yeah. Well, Neelix then suggests rotating crew assignments. Mm-hmm. So then he says, maybe I'll get a shot at tactical, or at least, you know, security detail doing that. And Tuvok's very nonplussed. He's like, sure, whatever. And then he then suggests turning Cargo Bay 2 into a third holodeck. Now, isn't Cargo Bay 2 where 7 of 9 is a regeneration alcove is? That's what I thought.
I thought so.
It was located there. So I don't know. Maybe part of Cargo Bay 2. You're not going to push 7 out of there, I guess.
No.
And then the third item that he brings up, Neelix brings up, his point of concern is the captain's whereabouts. Why haven't we seen her? And, you know, Chakotay gets a little defensive here. He's just like, look,
he barks. He's like, what are you talking about?
She can command from wherever she wants to. Yeah.
Captain's prerogative. He got really mad. I agree. Yeah, he was like, whoa, buddy.
He got pissed. You know, Harry tries to calm this disturbance down by saying, look, maybe we've just got the wrong attitude. Let's think of this as a 2-year vacation. And then everyone makes fun of Harry.
I know. I noticed that. I was like, why is everybody piling on?
And then when you make that final little dig at me about my lame joke, I say, you're such an optimistic guy. Okay. That line, I don't know what was going on, but if you listen to that carefully, it sounds like a very heavy Michigan accent.
Really?
Yes. When I say optimistic guy, it's
optimistic
very
optimistic guy.
I'm optimistic guy. I'm saying you're very Midwestern. Yes. And the only thing that I can come up with is it is around this time when we're filming that I became friends, very good friends with this couple that I've known for many years from Michigan. So I went on vacation with them. They came to visit me in LA. I went to visit them in Michigan. I went to their wedding in Michigan as well. So I was hanging around Michiganers a lot. And so
hanging around them. Yeah, maybe you were running lines with them.
They may have been visiting me and then just hearing those guys talk with their the Michigan accent came out in this particular scene. All right, let's jump to the next scene. We are now in Neelix's quarters, and he wakes up completely just manic, just distressed. He looks out the window. There's no stars. He orders some tea, and you can tell he's not handling this void very well.
Not at all. No. And I love the transition. I just want to jump to the beginning of the scene.
Yes.
Because there was a transition, and I noticed David Livingston doing it a bunch in this episode, these sort of design transitions. So before we come into Neelix's quarters, we go out of the briefing room with Chakotay, and he sits in his chair, and there's no one on the he's all alone, and he just looks at the view screen. And then there's a shot of his point of view of the view screen that pushes into the blackness. So the screen becomes black for a minute, and then
it
must have dissolved to the blackness of Neelix's quarters, and the lights come on.
Oh, right.
And it was a really
wonderful transition. Yeah.
Transition. Yeah. And I noticed things like that a number of times in this episode.
Definitely.
Normally we just do these hard cuts but this was a much more artistic, I guess, pre-planned transition.
I also noticed a lot of David's camera moves were very smooth, you know, and well thought out. Yep. But I will say, when we were talking during the bonus material section, when we were guessing who this episode would revolve around, I threw out Neelix. Remember that? And you were like, Neelix? And when this scene happened in Neelix's quarters, I was like, I was right. So then I thought maybe this is an entire Neelix episode, but there is a lot of Neelix in here. I mean, Neelix is the one who is the most anxious, I guess. Yeah, he's the most anxious of everyone in going through this void. So I felt somewhat vindicated.
It's funny because I kept guessing 7. I was like, sure, it was going to be a big 7 story.
Right.
And it's not.
Not really. No.
No.
No. So I was more on the money.
Show up till 13 minutes in.
Exactly. So I was a little more on the money than you were, I would have to say.
It becomes a Janeway story.
It does. Ultimately. But it takes time to finally get there. Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. We jump to mess hall, and now we see Paris and Torres, And this is a game that we have not played as of yet. Do you recall seeing this Dorada game before this?
No, and I've never seen it. Mm-mm. And I looked it up.
Yeah.
It was only in this episode as far as I could find.
Oh, wow.
It's not in any other Star Trek. There's no other episode of any series where this game Dorada was played.
Yeah.
So they must have just created a fictional game for this one episode that she and I could play.
Which looks like a cross between chess and Chinese checkers or something like that, you know.
It's on kind of a round board. The whole there's holes in the pieces.
Yeah,
it's an odd thing. And I make we're playing the game and the first move I make and B'Elanna says, "Oh, the Novakovich gambit." Predictable, very predictable. The Novakovich gambit.
It sounds like chess talk to me, you know.
It does sound like chess talk.
Yeah.
And I say, "Yeah, it's predictable because you always fall for it. And then we start bickering.
And what do you guys bicker? You're not just bickering.
We bicker.
This turns into
fight.
This is like a brawl.
Yeah.
It's like, what the
I was heck? Like, this is a, and Para says, this is a subtle game. It's all about subtlety. And she goes, you're subtle as, I don't know. She says something to me and I say, oh, well, if it doesn't involve pain sticks, then you don't want to do it.
Yeah. And she's done. She's like, no, I'm out of there. And she gets up.
Yeah.
But the fighting still continues. You won't drop it. She won't drop it. No. Neelix walks up. Neelix tries. He really does try.
He tries to calm us down.
No.
But then he finally gets, he loses it.
Yes.
And he's like, stop this fighting, stop this bickering. And then he starts to hyperventilate.
Yeah.
And Paris is like, you okay?
Whoops.
And Paris calls sick bay.
Right.
And we cut to sick bay.
Yeah.
And there's Neelix on a surgical bed and he's getting scanned, doc scanning him. And this is a moment, by the way, I noticed, what is Neelix wearing? Like, is he in his PJs? Yeah. It was a weird,
I don't know,
like PJs. I've never seen it before or since.
Yeah, you're right. That's
the weird outfit.
Yeah, the weird outfit.
Purple and rust color.
This must be his sleepwear. This has to be it. There's no other explanation.
It could be sleepwear because when Paris and B'Elanna are playing chess and they get in a fight, it's 3 a.m. They comment.
Right. Right.
So he might have just come in to get a cup of tea or something and.
Yeah. The doctor says, look, I'm going to treat you. This will help with your anxiety, which Neelix says, no, this is not anxiety. And then the doctor says, oh, well, dizziness, nausea, unspeakable dread. And that's when Neelix nods and he goes, wow, it's nihilophobia, the fear of nothingness. I'm like, what? Okay.
Is that really a thing?
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I'm not sure. I didn't look it up. But, you know, according to Star Trek Voyager, it is.
The doctor says nihilophobia, the fear of nothing. Mm-hmm. He says, or in layman's terms, the fear of nothingness.
Yeah, he's still doing it out there. And then the doctor says he can relate. He says, I can relate whenever I get deactivated. And then he starts describing that, which then further intensifies Neelix's anxiety. Yeah, he's like,
you're not helping.
You're not helping at all.
No. You're not helping this. And he says, you're going to get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Relax. Mm-hmm. And then we go to Astrometrics.
Yep.
Again, a cool transition because we kind of start on the star field over Tuvok. We think we might be seeing stars, which we don't expect in the story yet.
Right.
And we reveal that we're just in the Astrometrics lab.
Right.
And he's looking at a recorded star field, some files or something.
Yeah. Because he's using Astrometrics as a place to meditate, because typically he meditates in his quarters he's able to look out of the windows in his quarters and see the stars. And he uses each star as he visualizes each star, each point of light as one of his thoughts, you know? So it's really, it's very, you know, it's kind of cool.
Like, this is not for recreational use in here. She's like, if you want to go meditate, why don't you try? She suggests that he go to her regeneration alcove.
Yeah.
And if they can hook him up with some kind of interface, that would be as good.
Yeah.
You know, forget the meditating.
Right.
You should go to my board.
Just regeneration. Much more efficient. And you'll be rejuvenated just the same way that you're, you're using this meditation process. Mm-hmm. There's an alert beeping sound that happens. And we realize the long range sensors have detected dangerous levels of this theta radiation. Mm-hmm. Source, yet again, is unknown. We have no clue where this is coming from. Mm-hmm. Now we cut to Janeway's quarters And now Chakotay is the one who's briefing Janeway about the radiation, but really interesting that we don't even see Janeway's face, mm-hmm. anything. She's completely in shadow, but very cool shot though. I mean, it just, it sets the tone. It sets the mood. You realize Janeway is going in. Janeway is going through something. She is in a funk.
She's in a dark place.
She's literally
in a dark place.
Yeah, literally she's in a dark place in the shot.
It's very
and
dramatic.
In her life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, we're 13 minutes into this episode. I know we've mentioned it, but like, this is the first time we're seeing the captain.
Right.
She's, you know, she seems kind of numb or angry or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we don't know. We don't know yet. We have no clue why she's like this at this point.
No, we don't.
No.
And Chakotay tells her about this radiation. It could be from a vessel. And she says, okay, change course.
Right.
And he says, well, why don't you come play Velocity with me? I'll get, you know,
yeah.
we can go. And I thought when he said that, I was like, really? Chakotay, like that's the most romantic, calming thing. Go play Velocity. Why not a nice candlelit dinner or something? I was like, men, oh, you're going to the sports right away.
It's okay to go to, it's okay to go to sports.
Yeah, I guess so. But like she's in a mood. Maybe just a nice glass of wine and a nice meal.
I know. Or an Akuchimoya session.
A little Akuchimoya session.
Yeah.
He says the crew needs her. She says, I don't understand it. Maybe it's, she says, maybe it's this darkness. What does the crew call it? And Chakotay says they call it the void.
Right.
That's the first time we hear that word.
Mm-hmm.
She says she even wishes that there was a Borg cube for some distraction. Like, I'm so desperate for something to do.
Right.
I'm going crazy. And ultimately she reveals that reason. She's blaming herself for them being in this situation. Like all goes back to the caretaker and when she destroyed their way to get home to save these other people.
Yeah. She's been guilt ridden for 4 years now, feeling like she put everyone in this situation. She could have gotten everyone back home and now everyone has to pay for her decision. So this is a cumulative effect of 4 years worth of guilt, finally building up to the point
she hasn't been distracted
by Borg cubes or anything, right? So
if you don't have something to put your attention on, some work or some activity or something, you get in your head, and that's
it all rises to the surface now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is also the first time I remember seeing her in a short sleeve shirt with her communicator there.
Are you sure about that?
I'm not sure. No, I'm not. But it jumped out at me. I was like, because she kind of had on the bottom part of her uniform. It looked like same color.
Yeah, but remember when she fought the macrovirus, she had on that little tank top number without sleeves.
Right? Yeah, a tank top. This was a t-shirt. This was like short sleeve t-shirt, and her communicator was on the outside. I don't know. It was an interesting look.
Yeah.
I like seeing her in that look. I thought it was nice. So next we go to the bridge. And again, a cool transition. We kind of come off the blackness. We hear music in the blackness of what we realize is the view screen. It slowly sort of pans around. Nobody's on the bridge until we realize, oh, this music, this very sad, emotional sort of music is coming from Harry, who's sprawled out on the captain's chair, very relaxed, very bored, I guess, playing his clarinet. And I thought it was great. Your fingering would look great.
Well, thank you. And in the, you know, in our bonus material, I did talk about, this is the one thing I remember playing the clarinet and the piece was called Echoes of the Void, which from what I understand, it was an original composed piece by my clarinet teacher, Steve Carr. Yeah. So I think Steve Carr came up with this and he was like, okay, so this is my original piece. And I had to play Echoes of the Void. And
I
remember
it was
again,
great.
It looked good, but I was so nervous again. Every time I played the clarinet, super nervous because I wanted it to look realistic. You know, I wanted people that played the clarinet are going to be watching to make sure that every note is fingered correctly. So I was uber nervous, but like, as you said, it came off fine. So I'm okay with it.
It looked great. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I think Tuvok walks in.
Yes, he does. He does.
He walks in and you continue playing for Tuvok this composition, yeah. Echoes of the Void.
And what's different is typically whenever I ask Tuvok, hey, you want to hear this? You want to do that? He always says no to me.
No,
so this is
exactly.
The one time where he's like, well, I've got time nothing on else my going hands. On. I got nothing else going on. So this is the rare time where Tuvok is in agreement with Harry. Yeah.
And then we go to the holodeck and we're back in the Captain Proton simulation. Right. And Paris is now giving Seven a tour and updating her on the story of Captain Proton so that she can play a role in this.
Yeah. I don't even know if you're up. I think you're trying to get her to do it with you.
Trying to talk
time.
Her
yeah,
into like come on, you let's
can
do
play,
this. Let's,
you can play yeah. Constance Goodhart, Kirsten Turner's role in this chapter of my holo program. And it's just so funny. She's so Seven. You know, the robot comes towards her and all she does is just rip the cords, the wiring out. So she's like,
yeah, Paris is like, okay, Chaotica escaped. He left this robot. Robot's going to try to fight us. Okay. And you're going to be Constance Goodhart. And she's like, Constance Goodhart. I'm like, yeah, my secretary. And so funny. He's like, you just hang out and follow me around and help me.
Yeah.
And then he runs over and activates the program.
Yeah.
And the computer comes alive, goes, citizen of Earth, looking at Seven, surrender, do not resist, which I thought was ironic with resistance is futile.
It's futile, right? With the robot
he's
saying
that. Do not resist.
Yes. And which was Tarek, by the way. Remember, the robot is Tarek Ergen inside the robot suit. So.
Inside the robot was was Tarek Ergen, one of our regular bridge crew and background.
Mm-hmm.
And she just stares at the robot and she replies, I am Borg.
Yeah.
And opens the thing.
rips
out some wires.
The robot has been neutralized. May I leave now? May I leave now? She doesn't even want to play. She's so not.
And then Tom runs over in the shot. And again, close talking. Tom is right up in her face. And I was like, why? I run around and turn into the shot. Clearly, David Livingston was like, she's going to say a line. And then you just pop in next to her and say your line. And then we're out of the scene. Because I say, you know, come on, Seven, give it a chance. And he didn't want to cut back to me over there. He wanted me standing.
He wanted you to come over. That's why you
had
close
talk. It was odd blocking and close talking again, and clearly for a shot. It made no sense for me to do what, you know, run in like that. But
understood, but it didn't ruin the scene, though. The scene is still good.
It was a
still worked.
Scene. It was a cute scene.
Still worked. We jumped to the bridge where Harry is still playing Echoes of the Void, and suddenly there's a ship shake. Alarms are going off all over the place. Evidently, we've dropped out of warp and we are losing power now.
Losing power fast. Yeah. We have all these ship shots.
Yep. A montage of different parts of the ship losing power, of everyone in every part of the ship losing power.
There's a lot of shots here, by the
way. There are.
Like
my
mess
gosh.
Hall.
Yeah.
I wrote down mess hall, Janeway's quarters, a hallway, sick bay, the outside of the ship, back to engineering, back to the bridge.
Yeah.
It was a lot of like a big dramatic moment, which
Rick
was
Berman's
great.
Office. It was all power just going out everywhere. Yes,
exactly. My trailer, the hair makeup.
Your trailer. The Los Angeles Valley, you know, the entire valley losing power.
Everything's going out.
Yes. And then we kind of have a montage with everyone dealing with the blackout, right? Scene after scene after scene. Harry opens a panel with Tuvok watching
trying
over his shoulder on the bridge, trying to fix it. Chakotay's in the corridor. He hears some noise from clearly it's Neelix. You can hear him in the background. Yeah. Torres
is pitch black everywhere. It's pitch black. Like it's really dark.
You can't see anything. No. Torres is barking commands in engineering and back on the holodeck. Paris is, you know, what did you say? I think
he said something like, give me a second. I don't know how to operate this thing. And then the light comes on. It's a flashlight.
Right. Goes, and then you Captain Proton to the rescue is what you say right there, exactly. Which is great because Paris still has a sense of humor in the midst of, you know, a crisis, basically. Yeah. Losing power in the ship. That's a deal. That's a big deal.
I just thought he doesn't know how to operate a flashlight. Like, wow. And he does explain to Seven after he turns it on. He's like, well, it's not exactly Starfleet issue.
Right.
But still, it's a flashlight. I mean, come on.
I love after that when you tell Seven tells Paris to reroute power from the holodeck to the emergency relays, and you give her a yes, ma'am. I'm like, what?
I wrote that down.
The first yes, ma'am to someone other than Janeway in the entire show. I don't think you even yes, ma'am Torres. I was very excited. Well, I made a big note there.
I'm sure I do yes, ma'am Torres.
Well, yes.
I'm sure I do.
In your quarters and not shown on film, right?
Yes.
So
yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay. We go to a hallway next, the corridor, and Chakotay finds Neelix panicking on the floor.
Cowering on the floor, really.
Cowering.
Yeah. Is he still wearing his nightgown or his night clothes at that point?
He was wearing something and he was like hugging something.
He's hugging like a blanket. Oh, the blanket that his mom made, maybe. Remember?
I bet you that's what it was. Oh,
yes.
It was very dark, so hard to see, but it looked like he was.
Yes.
Yeah, it might have been the blanket that he sleeps with that he talked about in the early
episode. Yep.
That would be great if that's what it was.
Yes. Chakotay calms him down, assists him, gets him up off the floor. We jump to the bridge, and Harry has finally enabled partial sensors, and he's able to detect that the power drain was caused by some kind of dampening field off the port bow. We don't know, you know, we can't see anything. So Tuvok suggests, hey, let's launch a modified photon torpedo to act like a flare. Good idea. We then jump back to the Captain Proton hologram, and Tom is now looking for something to pry open the hatch. And he shines his flashlight, and lo and behold, we have an alien. This alien
creepy. I'm going to call it the poop alien.
Right. Well, this is what we ended up calling it, actually, on the show. I remember multiple times at conventions, Bob Picardo brings this up all the time. He's like, yeah, in sick bay, I was with Janeway, and there was the alien that looked like feces, you know, the poop alien. So, I mean, he's mentioned the poop alien numerous times that looks like the captain's
it's the poop.
He'll say he looks just like the captain's log. He'll say things like that, you know, making fun of this alien looking like feces.
The poop alien comes at you. What is he holding?
He's holding like some type of bright light. And when he hits you, your whole body looks like you're going through that crazy sausage tunnel, you know, thing that we reviewed, and that your whole body gets covered in some weird white light.
So whatever weapon he's got,
we
find a moment later that he's got burns all over his face. Yeah, so he definitely had a weapon of some sort.
Yeah.
But he knocks Paris down with that weapon. Seven disengages the safety protocols and takes Captain Proton's ray gun and shoots the poop alien with the holographic weapon.
Quick thinking, Seven. We jump back to the corridor. Chakotay and Neelix are walking in the dark.
Neelix is like, I saw something.
Yeah. Chakotay's light shines on an alien. And at that second, they're completely shocked. The alien is shot by none other than Janeway, who has ventured out of her quarters, and the alien runs down the corridors. Yeah, finally she comes out, and this is what brings
her. Yeah, the alien is hit by her phaser rifle, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And he still runs off.
He's still running off.
That sort of bumped me, I gotta say, because we also learn later on that these aliens are dying. Like, how can it be so strong that it doesn't? I'm sure it was at least on stun or something.
Right. But then remember our last episode, season four, with the alien who was one of the few survivors of his race. When we shoot him with the phaser, it kind of knocks him back for a second, but he's totally okay. It's like, what is going on with our phasers? Right.
Yeah, I wish that they had played that with Janeway in the hallway, where the poop alien kind of gets nicked on the shoulder or something. Yeah,
something.
Something smaller. Well, so that his ability to run off.
It should have been hampered. Sense. Yeah, because clearly our weapons need to be recalibrated. There's something going on with our weapons. They're not working very well.
No.
And then we jump back to the bridge, and now the photon torpedo flare is shot out towards the port.
We finally see, because it's dark outside, and it lights up.
Lights up.
Like a flare, three creepy little...
Alien vessels.
It was creepy.
Did you think they were little? They came off as little to you?
They came off as little to me.
Okay. They looked, I don't know. They were normal size. I thought they were normal size. They were just kind of interesting design, like a half moon kind of a design, whatever, you know. But anyway, it's still kind of creepy that these guys are just hanging out there. We didn't even know, right?
Yeah, we couldn't even see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're back at engineering. Janeway, Chakotay, and Neelix arrive with a power cell. Janeway's like, look, we can run the whole ship off of this one power cell. We jump back to the bridge.
Which is a little implausible.
Yeah, it is a little implausible, but we'll go with it. The bridge, we're back on the bridge. Emergency power is now back up. Tuvok raises shields and tells Janeway that the dampening field has been blocked. The dampening field that obviously was initiated by these poop aliens. It's been blocked. We have 17 intruders on board. And all of a sudden, the dampening field...
While they're talking, by the way, so they're working, Janeway and Chakotay are in engineering, kind of using that as a base.
Yeah.
And they're talking to Tuvok, who's on the bridge. Yeah. And I look over and there's Chakotay in a short sleeve.
What?
Looking. Yeah. So Chakotay is in a short sleeve, just like Janeway was in the short sleeve before. Oh. And I say, coincidence? I don't think so. Okay,
JC Shippers are rejoicing. They're so happy to hear this news. Hey, I didn't even notice that. So good eye. Yeah.
Short sleeves on both of them in this episode. Unusual look. Coincidence? I think not.
I am impressed with your JC shipping prowess, sir. Yes, good job. Welcome. Okay, you found it. Well, now the dampening field is being reinitialized by the aliens. Mm-hmm. So we start to lose power again when we're thinking, oh, no, not again. But then all of a sudden, the power loss stops. We regain power because an alien ship has now entered. Another ship shows up all the aliens that are on the ship have beamed off a Voyager back onto their three little tiny vessels.
Yep.
And this other vessel shoots all these, what do they call them? Spatial charges or something like that. And it chases off these three alien vessels.
They look
fireworks. Yes.
Super cool weapons. They're my favorite weapons so far on our show. They look like Disneyland fireworks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Firework weapons. Really cool. They hail us on screen. We see the Malon for the first time, and immediately he says, I spent 13 spatial charges on shooing away these other aliens. What are you going to do to compensate? I expect compensation. Yeah. And his final words to us are, before the commercial break, are, what are you doing in the middle of nowhere? Which we're like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, his ship, for some guy that just took out all these other aliens so quickly.
Yeah.
You look at his ship, there's steam coming out. He looks like the garbage man.
Yeah.
I'm going to call him the garbage
man. Yeah, it's a garbage ship.
It looks like he's running this spaceship on like steam and coal or something. And his suit had like rivets in it. It was very steampunky.
I'm a fan of. Yeah, we're both fans of that.
We love steampunk, but I was a little bit I don't know. But I guess he's the garbage man, so it makes sense.
He's a powerful garbage man. So now we're in the transporter room, which is behind me right here, as you can see. And he beams in, the Malon. His name is Imk, right? IMK. Controller Imk is what he calls himself. Mm-hmm. And he is the captain of the Malon export vessel. He advises Jane.
A little detail though, as he's beaming in, they detect high levels of theta radiation as he's sort of particling in.
Yeah.
And so Janeway says, orders a force field around the platform. And then when he comes in, she says, maybe you should just stay right where you are. We can talk from a distance.
Oh, yeah.
She says, you appear to be leaking.
Yes.
Which I love.
That's a good line. He does advise Janeway to turn around because there are thousands more of those tiny ships, those half moon ships ahead, and that we would not survive another attack. And then Janeway says, well, we can't turn around because we need to get back home. And this is the point where I loved his delivery of that line. He goes, well, then you'll be coming with me. Just the where he put his pauses, his emphasis was just so cool, you know? Yeah. And then Tuvok's like, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, there's a spatial vortex a few light years away that leads to the other side of the expanse. This is the secret passageway. And he says that he's on a transport mission, but he's kind of shady about it. He doesn't really explain what it is. Yeah, she's like,
what kind of transport mission are you on? Because you got all this radiation. Are you at war with these guys?
Yeah. He's like, none of your business.
Won't answer all the questions.
No.
He's detected one of the poop aliens aboard on the ship. Mm-hmm. And he says, you need to hand that guy over to me and I'll show you how to get to this vortex and how you can get 2 years ahead.
You hand me the poop, I'll get you to the vortex, is what he says.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which and Janeway's seems like
a fair deal.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a fair deal. We'll give you poop and you give us vortex. But Janeway's, you know, she already can sense something's up. Her intuition is sensing something right now.
Yes.
And we're in sickbay. And Janeway goes to question the alien. And he says that the Malon have been poisoning their space. And they don't know why for attacking them. Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't know why. And he just knows that they're so powerful that there's no way for them to stop Malon from doing what they're doing. And the doctor says that we should probably get him back to his people because they probably would know how to treat him better than we can. Because the doctor says he's dying, you know. Yeah. We jump to the briefing room and we have Chakotay and Tuvok. Chakotay is bringing up the whole Janeway isolation issue. And Tuvok sort of like, I already know what's up. and Chakotay's like, what? She told you? He's like, no. I know Janeway so well. Captain Janeway's methods are unorthodox. That is her strength as a leader, as well as her greatest weakness. That was an interesting line to have written right there.
Chakotay starts the conversation by saying, you know, I realize that we're not exactly best friends.
Correct.
And that we've kept a distance from each other.
Right.
And I was like, what? I don't feel that way. I mean, I don't think that they're like super tight buddies, but I haven't felt since the pilot episode much tension specifically between them. So I just thought that was unnecessary. It was like,
well, yeah, but at the same time, I believed it because Tuvok betrayed him. Tuvok was a double agent. Tuvok had infiltrated his crew. So really, you know, Chakotay is going to have this grudge against him and it's still there. He feels like the whole reason why he's in the predicament that he is now is because of the espionage that happened.
I guess, you know? I just felt like Chakotay bringing that up in the scene was like, why are you bringing this? Like, that seems
4 years
old.
Later.
Yeah. Like way water under the bridge. Like,
okay. Agreed.
We're still back there. Yep. But, and also I thought David Livingston's, the way that he covered this scene was really nice. Cause the close-ups were all very low angles.
Yes.
Which are very dynamic. And we didn't normally do that on our show in a scene like this, which is just a talky scene in the briefing room. So I thought it looked really cool. I thought David did a really nice job.
And, yeah.
And basically Chakotay says, look, you know, we both get who Janeway is. I may need your support if she tries to be the hero like that again.
Right. Yeah. Cause he does. Doesn't Tuvok tell a story about something she did when she was.
Yeah. He tells a story when she was a first year commander on the USS Billings. She sent an away team to a volcanic moon and it erupted. And their shuttle, their mission was, you know, they were hurt.
Yeah. All so the other members of the away team were hurt. They were injured. Yeah. So that she went back solo on that shuttle to prove a point, and she almost died herself.
She almost died. Yeah. She went all by herself to let them know that it wasn't in vain that they went and did this.
Right.
So yeah, she's got a history of trying to be the hero. And Chakotay's like, you know, let's have each other's back on this.
Exactly.
If she tries this
if
again,
she tries
which is
to
a
be
good
a hero.
Setup.
It's a good setup for the later. Yeah. So we understand what's happening. It's a necessary scene. We jump to sort of a jump. It jumps back and forth between bridge and sickbay. We are at the coordinates. There are 8 ships there. 12 more are approaching. Now we jump back to sickbay and we learn from our poop alien that they have lived there for millions of years undisturbed until the Malon came.
Started poisoning them for no reason.
Right. And so then, you know, Janeway says, well, you need to talk to them and tell them what's going on. And he goes, where's your communications relay or something? And then I'm thinking, why didn't Janeway just say open a channel and then have the guy speak? Instead, she like reaches, she grabs his, little poopy arm and makes him help him type. And I'm like, what are you doing? It's like a little unnecessary to do that.
Yeah. And it seemed to, and it was a very dramatic sort of, when he begs for her help, he's like, will you help us? Yes.
Help us. As he's being beamed out.
Yeah. As he's being beamed out. Right. So you see this plea to her sympathetic side that we know Janeway has. And that's the issue she's talking about before is that she had such sympathy in the caretaker with the caretaker and the O'Compans that she sacrificed her crew's ability to go home. And so she's now back in the same kind of situation. Will you help these poop aliens? And she's going to be in the same sort of predicament. So,
yeah, we also learned from the doctor that he has detected that all the aliens on all the ships have been poisoned by theta radiation. Mm-hmm. So we know that, like, they're all dying, every single one of them. Yeah. And so Janeway is, you're right, Janeway is in the exact same predicament basically that she was 4 years ago. This is another this is another test for her, right?
Yeah.
So we jump to astrometrics, and sensors show that the Malon vessel is ejecting massive quantities of contaminated antimatter, over 90 million isotons of contaminated antimatter. And we now know this guy's just dumping. He's just dumping waste in the in the poop aliens' territory, their home world, their homeland. And Janeway hails the Malon captain, and she proposes a solution to end this dumping of contaminated waste. You can process antimatter so that it's not contaminated. So
we've got the technology and we'll share it with you.
Yeah.
So they beam him over to engineering.
Yeah. Well, he says, give me the information now. Cause Janeway was to say, let us get through the vortex and we'll give you the info. And the guy goes, no, let me see it now. So Janeway says, fine, we'll show it to you now. So he beams over.
And we go to engineering. B'Elanna's giving him sort of a tour. We cut to her walking him by the warp core and talking about how Voyager cleans its waste exhaust. And Chakotay even hands him a pad that has all the schematics of this technology and even offers to provide converters to get him started so he can clean all this up, and his all his people can clean this up. They don't have to worry about this anymore. Our steampunk alien, what's his name again?
Imk
starts processing this. He's like, okay, well, this would solve a lot of problems. But then he reveals, do you know what else this would do? It put me out of business. I'd be obsolete.
I would not accept it.
I don't want this. I want to keep polluting. I don't care if it kills people. I'm going to keep polluting because I'll be out of a job.
Yeah. This is pretty much describing what we on Earth have been dealing with ever since the Industrial Revolution. Ever since the Industrial Revolution, it's all been about pollution and dumping stuff all the time for big money. And it's all about money, right? It's all about profit. And it's so sad to see this.
Yeah. And Imp basically says, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And I'm the only one that knows about this vortex.
Yeah.
So you try to fight me or force something, and I've got a lot more firepower than you.
I'll take you out.
10 seconds, he says.
Yeah, he said 10. It just reminded me of when people say that, you've heard people say, I'll take you out in a New York minute. You know, you hear that, a New York minute. Mm-hmm. I'll take you out in a Delta Quadrant, 10 seconds, or whatever. It's just, okay, buddy. Okay. So he threatens us, essentially. He
threatens us and takes off, and we go to Janeway's quarters, and Chakotay suggests that they fight their way through the vortex and get to the other side, and they can blow the whistle on Imp. And Janeway says, well, we can't be sure that the other Malon are going to feel any differently than him. So we got to take care of this ourselves.
Right.
But if we destroy the vortex, then to protect the aliens, then we destroy our own shortcut through the vortex. So she's exactly where she was in the caretaker. And then she asks him, are you ready to captain this ship?
Yeah.
And he says, yes. Mm-hmm. She says, okay, assemble the crew.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So yeah, here we go again. Yeah. So we're on the bridge.
Captain on the bridge, Tuvok says.
Yeah.
And everybody stands his attention. It's a very dramatic moment because she hasn't been on the bridge. She's been in her quarters for a couple of months.
No, but it's a cool scene, though, because everyone's really happy to see her. You can see that. Yeah. She talks to Harry first. She says, Harry. Mm-hmm. how have you been? Which is similar to the pilot when we left Deep Space Nine. You know, Janeway talks to Harry first on the bridge, and I say, just fine, ma'am. And I, of course, have been around Tom so much, I throw the ma'am in there, right? Just fine, ma'am. Janeway tells everyone about her plan, but everyone refuses. And I got to say, your refusal brought a little tear to my eye. It really did. I was like, oh, Tom.
She orders Tom.
Yeah.
He says, I can't follow that.
Can't order. Follow that order.
Very quietly. And she looks at them all. No one's going to comply.
Yeah.
She looks at Seven, and Seven says, I will not comply.
Yeah. She asks, basically. She
looks at the doctor, and the doctor says,
what am I to do? Or something like
that. What's a hologram,
what's a hologram to do? Exactly. Yeah. What is a hologram to do? Not take our holodeck time is what a hologram is supposed to do.
So they need a new plan. And together they sort of pitch in and they decide if they destroy the vortex and go to warp before it closes, that they can kind of stay ahead of its collapse and sort of get pushed along by this collapsing vortex.
By the shockwave. So,
by the shockwave, exactly.
Right. So the instance we cross the threshold of the vortex, we're going to fire those torpedoes. Yep. Vortex begins to collapse. We jump to high warp and the shockwave will help push us out. Torres says she can reinforce the aft shielding to help out with the shockwave. Janeway says there's still one obstacle, Malon. Tuvok says antimatter waste has weakened the bulkhead surrounding the cargo hold. A direct phaser strike should disable them.
And then so all hands to battle stations. Everybody, we got a plan. We're gonna kind of ride this wave of the vortex collapsing. And then Janeway goes over to Chakotay and quietly says, you told them. They knew they knew coming in, she says, what was happening.
Which he responds with, let's just say I wouldn't be a fine first officer if I hadn't. And they share a little bit of a look, a little bit of a JC moment.
What I think Chakotay should have said is,
I love you.
Let's just, maybe.
Okay.
Or he could have said, let's just say I wouldn't be a fine first officer if I hadn't. And I'd be losing my JC Nookie. I think he should have mentioned the JC Nookie in there somehow.
And then, he pulls his uniform aside to show the short sleeve shirt that he has on that match.
Exactly. Turns, right? Yeah. Yeah. And a tattoo.
A little tattoo JC. Okay, good.
That's pretty. You. Okay.
You just wrote the whole, you know, rest of the episode. Yeah,
it would have been such a better scene. They talked about Nookie.
We jump to the, we have exterior shots of the battle in space with Malon, Malon vessel. Back and forth. And again, more cool fireworks fire from the Malon vessel.
Super cool. Super I wrote flying through a Disneyland fireworks show. It was like crazy.
Yeah.
Voyager hits Emp's ship with everything. She says, hit him with everything we got.
Right.
Paris is like, vortex is dead ahead, you know, whatever.
Right. Well, we lose an engine though, right? So we lose an engine in the process. And Janeway says, can you get us out of here with one engine? And Paris is like, yes, ma'am, I can do this. He starts Imp starts firing more spatial charges at us. Janeway says, avoid them, which Paris does a great job, kind of like, you know, just rolling out of that.
Twisting and rolling.
Evasive maneuvers. Mm-hmm. And that's when Seven goes, Captain Proton to the rescue. And Paris is a little embarrassed. She's like, I'll explain later. He wants to get past it right there, but it's still a funny line. Coming
from fun moment. Yeah. Paris does some cool flying.
Right. And then
Seven's just got to make a joke because she's getting in touch with her sense of humor.
She's becoming more human. We get our other nacelle gets a direct hit. So now we have zero engines. Both engines are offline. We're just kind of just drifting, really.
Flying by inertia.
We're flying by inertia directly towards the vortex. The Malon vessel now begins to maneuver to block our path to the vortex, and it looks like we're dead in the water. What are we gonna do? I mean, we can't kamikaze that guy. We're all gonna die, right? And that's when the poop aliens show up, and they come to the rescue. They start distracting the Malon vessel, firing on the Malon vessel. Malon vessel fires back and destroys all of those other ships, but at least one of them gets destroyed.
And Janeway says to Tuvok, target his cargo hold, because we talked about his cargo hold was
weakened. That's right.
And she says, it's time to take out the garbage.
Time to take out the garbage. What a great line. That's just.
And Tuvok hits the cargo hold.
Yeah.
And
that's like a diehard line. A one liner. Really cool. Yeah. It ruptures, explodes. Imp and his Malon crew
flies into the vortex. We basically blow up the garbage, take out the garbage.
Yeah.
And then we drop these delay charge torpedoes.
That's right.
As we go into the vortex and the collapse begins and we're flying along, the shockwave hits the back and pushes us through the vortex.
Yeah.
We're riding this shockwave. And then when it finally finishes collapsing, we realize we're still not outside of the, we're still in the void.
Yeah, we're still, we're not.
I think Paris says 200 kilometers left. So we're still sort of floating with the inertia of this shockwave.
Yeah. I think it was further than 200 kilometers, but yes, we're not out of it yet, basically.
We're not out of the darkness yet. We're still in the darkness. So everyone starts looking, but we're close enough that we anticipate we're going to be out of it soon. So everybody starts looking. And I love this moment. It was really emotional. B'Elanna comes down by Paris and they're standing looking. Do you see anything?
Yeah.
Paris says, I think I see something.
The doctor, you need to get your eyes checked, Mr. Paris. So that's his comment. But the camera angle moving from you to B'Elanna to the doctor, very dramatic and very emotional.
Very dramatic. Sure. Yeah. Everybody on the bridge is looking for signs of life. Mm-hmm. Are we out of this darkness? And then we see a little twinkle or two. And Janeway says, Harry,
what do you see
out there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Harry walks over by Seven. And as he's walking over, he says,
I don't know.
I see a densely packed region with thousands of star systems.
Yes.
And he looks to Seven. He says, looks pretty lively. And then the last shot we see is out in space. Colorful nebulas.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's
beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful.
We're out of this darkness.
Yeah.
Whew.
You know what? This was an action-packed ending for sure. You know, I kept thinking, man, how can this be the season 5 opener if it's just crossing a void expanse with nothing? Like, how's this going to be exciting? Well, now we know. We know exactly how it got exciting. So, what is your lesson for this episode?
I don't know if I can put it in like a simple idea, but it's basically, my thought was, too much time in your head thinking is not good, and you need something to do. You need something outside of yourself to put your attention on, or you're going to go to a dark place, because Janeway went to a very dark place and just had too much time on her hands to think, and everybody had too much time on their hands to think and start the negativity. Neelix, everybody. So too much time in your hands is not a good thing.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Well, I'm going to say I have kind of multiple lessons here. I mean, you know how people say two heads are better than one. I'm going to say all the heads of the crew are better than people splitting off. And so, you know, with Janeway's solution of her being the one left,
being the hero,
is not the way to go. I mean, it's better to stay together as a group than to split it up. Also, the other lesson is just the environment versus commerce. You know, I mean, that age old dumping is just something that we hear about all the time. This company dumped their radioactive waste in a lake, or they dumped it over here, and just the people living in this area are now all have cancer. And it's just, this is an age old problem. And it's always been about big money, big corporations over the needs of the few outweighing the needs of the many with the corporation's mindset. So, so that's the other lesson.
Greed.
Greed. We need to fight greed. Yeah. We need to fight greed and corporate greed and selfishness as much as we can. And if all of us common people band together, that's how you fight corporate greed. That's the only way, right?
Love it. Yeah. Great. What would you give this 1 out of 10?
I'll give it an 8 because it involved everybody. I mean, if that's one of your main criteria, everybody was involved in this episode. Everybody was. And I like the story. I liked how it began, how it ended. Mm-hmm. I think the guest stars did a good job as well. So That's my rating. Nice. 8. What are you going to give it?
You'll be surprised again. I'm going to give it a 9.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to give this a 9.
Doing Robbie.
I really like this.
Excuse me. Can you bring Robbie McNeil into, know who you are, but
I thought this was a really great episode. We got Captain Proton is in the game.
Yeah.
We had, we played into the big mythology of Janeway's journey on the show and, and the kind of responsibility that she felt. Everybody was in the episode. Everybody had something to do. Mm-hmm. There was good humor in it. Our guest stars were great.
Yeah.
You know how we've had dense,
the best that I've ever seen.
That's true.
It's true. You know how we've had dense episodes before where both of us will complain about that. This is a dense episode as well, but it's a fun episode. Boy, it's a fun episode for sure. Yep.
I agree. Yeah. I like this one a lot.
Excellent.
Liked it a lot. Well, good.
All right. Okie dokie.
Here we are in season 5. All right.
I can't even believe it. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening to Robbie and I wax poetically about season 5, episode 1.
Literally with haikus and limericks.
Yes, we did. And join us next week when Robbie and I will discuss episode 2 of season 5, Drone. Drone, which is pretty easy to think about what that's going to be about. So Drone. Mm-hmm. So join us next week, everyone. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
See you next week.
Bye.